We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
BlueWire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
Levine with the runway. Raising it. Zach Levine does it again.
The crossover. Levine.
Get up or get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're on the Blue Wire Network. We're brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here with Jason Pat, and we have a special guest to discuss the NBA draft with us tonight, John Wasserman from Bleacher Report. John, what's going on, man? I typically see you at the Combine every year, but because this is a hellacious year in every way possible, that was all digital this season. So how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I mean, I'm kind of sick and tired of talking about the same guys over and over, but let's do it again.
Let's do it.
I guess I'll open this just by saying, What are you hearing about the Bulls right now from people you talk to around the league, and sort of what insight do you have on their thinking into the fourth overall pick right now?
So I could tell you what people are saying, and it's probably not coming from Chicago, but what people, you know, in the league think they're doing and maybe what they've heard from inside the front office. And I've heard Halliburton has been a name from a couple people that Chicago is giving a hard look at. I think everyone kind of assumes that the top three are going to be LaMelo, Wiseman, Edwards, in whatever order. And so, you know, I haven't really heard much about whether Chicago wants any of those guys, just because I think the assumption is they'll be off the board. I've heard they've shown interest in Killian Hayes. And then I think the natural assumption, I guess, which I'm making, and that this is just totally speculation, is Denny Avdija, to me, is like right there in the best player available category, a guy who fits what they already have, if in fact they're looking for a guy who fits what they already have. And so those three names stand out to me as the two of them are guys I've heard they've shown interest with, and Denny is somebody who to me just makes too much sense to ignore.
I was going to ask you about the top three next, actually. So obviously Wiseman, Ball, and Edwards are projected to be the first three players taken in this draft. The Bulls have the fourth pick. Which of those players do you think is most likely to fall? And give me a like percent odds that it happens on draft night, falls out of the top three.
I mean, I think the funny thing is like LaMelo Ball probably has the best chance to go one and the best chance to slip to Chicago. I mean, and obviously a lot's going to depend on if any trades are made, but you know, we could just kind of talk it out loud. If Minnesota takes Edwards and the Warriors take Wiseman, it wouldn't be crazy to think that Charlotte would take Obi Toppin. I mean, I think Obi is the guy who can really mess things up a little bit and allow someone like LaMelo to slip. Everyone I talk to loves Obi Toppin, whereas like, you know, there are a lot of questions about Anthony Edwards' maturity and his professionalism, whether he's got a style meant for winning, and there are questions about LaMelo's shooting and defense and his maturity as well. And even, you know, of course, everyone seems to have questions, at least on Twitter, about Wiseman's fit and upside in today's league. And everybody, I know that Toppin has, like, defensive question marks, but everyone I talk to around the league, nobody, it doesn't seem like it's going to really factor into his draft stock, into a team's evaluation on him, because everyone's buying his offensive upside. And a team like the Hornets, who I think were like 28 in offense and really don't have any solid go-to player. I mean, Devontae Graham was their best scorer, and he shot 38% from the floor. I wouldn't be shocked if they took Obi, you know, over LaMelo. But, yeah, I'd say LaMelo. I still have LaMelo going number one, but if he doesn't go one, I think it's possible he slides to Chicago at four.
Yeah, speaking of LaMelo, perfect segue here. You had a column, like best fits for LaMelo Ball, and you had the Bulls as the best fit. Why do you – I know Ricky loves LaMelo. He also thinks he's number one in the draft. Why do you think LaMelo Ball is – his best fit is with the Bulls?
I mean, I think if you're LaMelo, Chicago is the team you'd want to go to. I mean, I think he gives you the best balance of touches, you know, playing time at the one. He gives them something Chicago needs, which is passing. And at the same time, unlike we saw in Australia where he had to kind of force the issue a lot and they relied on him to score, they don't really have to rely on him to take so many tough shots. With LaVine and Markkanen, and I'm assuming Carter's going to have a bigger role, and Kobe White could probably score 20 on any given night. So just a good balance. He won't have too heavy of a workload. He could just play to his strengths as a passer. And honestly, I kind of like Kobe coming off the bench as that sixth man. It's just something about the whole team as a whole with LaMelo there, giving them the passing they need, and Chicago giving them the support that he needs.
Yeah, I fully agree with everything you said there. There is a section of the Bulls fan base that thinks that the Bulls should let Kobe be the point guard next year, and why would you draft another point guard when you just drafted Kobe White? To me, Kobe sort of projects more as like a microwave scorer guy who can give you some versatility in terms of playing on or off the ball at either backcourt spot. What were sort of your impressions of Kobe's first year, and where do you see him in terms of an archetype ending up long term?
Yeah, I mean, you guys watch more Chicago Bulls than I did, but that's exactly the type of player I kind of predict he'll be in terms of his trajectory in the league and his value and his fit. Like, I think he's just better as a guy who focuses more on scoring, and of course he'll give you secondary playmaking, but I wouldn't want Kobe White with the ball for 30 minutes a game making all the decisions. I just think he's just a better scorer than he is facilitator. And I think in today's league, you could play three guards at the same time. I mean, you could play LaMelo and Kobe and LaVine. I mean, if they even keep LaVine on the roster once this draft is done. But, yeah, to me, I think LaVine is better. I mean, Kobe is better off just focusing on doing what he does best, and that's shot making, that's catching fire, you know, rattling off 12 points in a couple minutes. That's his game.
Yeah, I guess if the Bulls did draft LaMelo or Killian, like you mentioned with Zach LaVine playing three guards, like, do you think that they would actually keep all three guys, or do you think this is a situation where if they draft one of these guys, maybe they have to pick between Kobe and Zach in the future to pair with whoever they draft?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know exactly what they're going to do in the future and what their plan is. I wouldn't be shocked if they tried to get rid of LaVine. I mean, he's just like, we know what he is at this point, and he's a producer. But I think, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, I think like his spot-up numbers are pretty bad. Like, he's not somebody who's you can kind of put off the ball. Maybe that's one of my hesitations with LaMelo there, is LaMelo needs the ball, and then so that, I mean, that means LaVine plays a little bit more spot-up, and that he's not really great at, you know, standing on the wings and in the corners and, you know, picking his spots as a secondary scorer. Like, he needs the ball in his hands. And when he has the ball in his hands, he could score, but everyone else kind of does a little standing around, and obviously he's not super efficient. But, I don't know what the plan is. I wouldn't be shocked if they're seeing what they could get for LaVine.
All right, back to the draft. I know you have Denny as the sixth overall player on your big board. I have him a little bit lower than that, and in my opinion, I don't think he really has the upside to necessitate being a top five pick, but people who are a lot smarter than me, like yourself, seem to really like Denny. So give me the case for how Denny can bring back the value of the number four overall pick.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm with you. I mean, I wouldn't bet on any all-star appearances. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if, like, he made an all-star game once in his career, but I'm not betting on a star. I'm betting on his floor. And I think there's just a lot of certainty with Denny in this draft, and I'm valuing that certainty in a field filled with uncertainty. And so I just feel safe about him. Like, I know he's a pro. I know he's going to, you know, be a worker, a high-character guy, and he checks a lot of boxes. He does a little bit of everything. Of course, the knock is he doesn't do any one thing great, and that's what could prevent him from becoming a star. I mean, it's tough to picture him ever being, like, a 23-point-per-game scorer or anything, and But I just, you know, I just like his overall game and a guy who can pretty much fit with whatever team that picks him. And so it's kind of like I know I have him at number six, but really that range, it really depends who I'm picking for. And so if you said to me he was 10 and not six, I mean, I really wouldn't put up much of a fight. And depending, again, who I was picking for at number six, I might say, okay, I actually like Patrick Williams' upside a little bit more for this particular team, so I'd take Pat Williams. But, yeah, to me, it's with Denny, it's just the safety more than picturing the upside.
So you mentioned Halliburton as, you know, potentially a guy the Bulls might be interested in. So I think, you know, the Bulls roster right now, in my opinion, is sort of totally in flux. I think it's possible that, you know, whatever young core the Bulls have right now could definitely be broken up, and that, you know, the piece that is drafted at four, I think that in a lot of ways, like, you're going to want to try to build around that guy's skill set to build a team that, like, complements that player's skill set to an extent. So Halliburton, what's the ideal role for Tyrese Halliburton, like, in terms of how he's used in an NBA team in the pieces you want around him?
Yeah, I mean, I think ideally he is your secondary ball handler. Like, I love Halliburton in Atlanta, where Trae Young does all the dancing and creating. And Halliburton ranked in the 99th percentile as a spot-up player, so he's totally comfortable spotting up and shooting off the catch. But, of course, he gives you that secondary playmaking. Of course, the big question with Halliburton is, can he beat anyone off the dribble? You know, can your offense put enough pressure on the defense if he is your number one ball handler? I happen to like him in Chicago because they have Kobe and Levine to put pressure on defense with their scoring, with their off the dribble games, and Halliburton could kind of just play to his strengths, moving the ball, knocking down open shots, making good decisions, passing. I mean, that's his game. So I question whether or not you want him being your lead guy again for 35 plus minutes, because I just question whether he could put enough pressure on defenses off the dribble and in transition. But I think as a secondary playmaker and a spot up player, I just think he's a good fit. And again, just like Denny, like, I value his floor over his upside. I don't picture an all-star, but I just picture a guy who could make the game easier for the guys around him and fit into pretty much any lineup.
How do you evaluate his defense? Because to me, I think that while he has some really impressive defensive statistics at the college level, I feel stupid saying this, but, like, he just seems like a little too skinny for me. I think he's going to be, like, targeted early in his career defensively, but also, like, the numbers sort of indicate that he should be pretty good long term with that massive steal percentage. I think it was near 4%. So, yeah. How do you view his defense, and do you view him as being, like, an above average NBA defender long term?
I mean, I think I'm kind of in the middle to the point where I'm not worried about him, but I'm not going to pretend like that 3.8 steal percentage means he's going to be a stopper. I think that IQ is going to translate to defense, and he's going to make smart plays. And yeah, there are going to be some, you know, depending on who he's matched up against, some guys who take advantage of the fact that he's got those long, skinny legs and he's probably easy to play through. But on the other hand, I don't think he's really going to kill you defensively. I don't think he's really going to move the needle for a team that much at either end.
I have a quick question about Halliburton as well. But first, a quick word from our sponsors, Indeed and BetOnline. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. And Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account anytime, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. So right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it, and fast. So try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. Football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in at every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season-opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. So head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use that promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And we're back, Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We are talking NBA Draft with Jonathan Wasserman of Bleacher Report. We've been talking about LaMelo Ball, Tyrese Haliburton, and the question I was going to ask about Haliburton, you mentioned that you've heard from some other teams or from around the league that the Bulls might have some interest in Haliburton. You guys were just talking about how he kind of fits in with the team. Ricky, I know you are kind of questionable on him. Do you think the Bulls would actually take him at four? Do you think that would be maybe a guy that maybe they'd look to trade back and get? Because four seems like a bit of a reach for him, but maybe if the Bulls want to trade down and maybe get another asset, maybe they take him a little further back in the draft. Do you think they would actually take him at four?
I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't bet against it. He's another one of those guys, like I said with Toppin, like everybody likes Haliburton. Just one of those – he aces every interview. He's just like such a likable kid. And the fact that he can fit anywhere, he makes good decisions, and just like a trustworthy player, I think in this draft just holds a lot of value. I wouldn't bet on him taking him at four. I think ideally they would trade back, you know, with like the Knicks or something or Detroit and try and get him a couple spots later. And to me, Denny, I think from what I'm hearing, more people have Denny over Haliburton on their boards. So that's – I'd assume they pick Denny over Haliburton. But I've seen crazier things.
Yeah.
The Bulls were reported to bring Kyra Lewis in for a workout today. He's sort of seen as a fringe lottery pick, I think. Like, you know, sort of in that, let's say, 17 to 10 range or something. But, you know, there has been a little buzz with the Knicks on him, too. So maybe he could even go as high as number 8. What do you think the sort of the pitch for Kyra Lewis to be your guy is? Like, if you're going to trade back a few spots, maybe pick up an additional asset, you know, do you see him as a primary initiator long term? How do you see his defense and, you know, sort of how projectable do you think his shooting is?
Yeah, I mean, I don't love him for Chicago. I think he's a little bit too similar to Coby White. I think he's like, if I'm the Knicks, I'd be more interested in Lewis than I would be if I'm Chicago. Like the Knicks, who don't have a point guard who can really, again, get into the paint and make things happen. And I think that's going to be Lewis's moneymaker. Like, that's what's going to earn him contracts, is his ability to create scoring opportunities and get into the paint and keep defenses backpedaling. I don't love him because I just don't question him. I just don't trust his decision-making and his ability to execute as a score at a high level in terms of, you know, shooting a high percentage and having a good assist to turnover ratio. I think he's going to be able to generate a lot of offense and create opportunities. I kind of like him in the Dennis Schroeder role. Like, that's kind of the player I expect him to be in terms of trajectory, in terms of value in the league, not an all-star guard, but a valuable guard if he lands in the right lineup. And, so that's kind of what I see with Lewis. And I don't think the Knicks would take him at 8. It does seem like a little bit of a reach given who else is going to be on the board. But to me, from what I'm hearing, and I know he worked out for Orlando also, and Orlando to me seems like such an obvious fit. I'd imagine he goes somewhere in that late lottery range to Orlando.
You have Devin Vassell 16, which I think is a little lower than a lot of people have him. So, curious, you know, like I would even be fine with the Bulls taking Vassell at 4, I think, in a lot of ways, just because I do think like he's a safe bet to have a very solid NBA career at a premium position. I really like his defense. I trust his shooting, even though obviously the change in form has been a little worrisome in the pre-draft process. But just curious your thinking on why you have Vassell 16. You know, is it mostly because he just lacks all creation ability, or kind of what's your thought process on that?
Yeah, so I mean, I've had Vassell. I moved him down to the last board probably more than I moved anyone else, and it had nothing to do with that video that's going around. But I don't know. And maybe this is also this could screw me later because there's just so much time, like too much time to change my mind, right? And how many times can I watch the same damn games over and over again? And eventually, it's gonna, you know, play tricks on me. And so, I don't know. At this point, I'm like, okay, maybe I got a little excited. I wanted to move him up. I love his 3-and-D and the potential that he's shown with this new pull-up game that he had this year, which he didn't have the year ago. But he really just doesn't really show much creativity at all. And for me, for a wing player, you know, second year, 12.7 points per game, 1.6 assists. Like, I'm not huge on putting too much stock into stats, but he's just such a limited creator in terms of someone you can give the ball to in the half court and say, go get a bucket. I just don't see it. And we're really banking – offensively, we're just really banking on him being a big-time shooter. And he really didn't shoot threes at a high volume. Like, he took 3.5 per game this year. I mean, he made 1.5. That's supposed to be his, like, moneymaker offensively, and he didn't make that many threes. And he does have a little bit of a weird release that's, like, so far above his head, which I like, but also – I don't know. There's a little bit of me questioning it. 73.8% from the free throw line. I wish it was a little higher. So we're just putting a lot of stock into that jump shot because I don't really see him being a creator. And I love his defense. Don't have a negative thing to say about it. And I compare him to Mikal Bridges, which is a nice role player, but I just can't picture any upside. And I'm just a little bit hesitant to put all that stock into his jumper.
I'd like to go back to Killian Hayes, which we haven't talked about that much here. You have him number 2 right behind LaMelo Ball. I know Ricky had Killian Hayes in his first mock draft right after the lottery. Killian Hayes to the Bulls. We did a whole podcast about Killian Hayes where we talked about him, and I was kind of sold on him. Why do you like Killian Hayes at number 2, or not even in your mock draft, just on your board over some of the other, like, over Anthony Edwards, over James Wiseman, over the other guys that are at the top of the board?
Yeah, so that range for me is really, again, it depends who's picking. Like,
yeah,
if the team at number 2 already has a ball-dominant point guard, I could say, okay, I understand not taking Killian Hayes. My confidence level isn't that high that he's the second-best prospect in the draft. But he's just, to me, he's the most complete guard in the draft. He keeps getting better, and he's 19. And so I just, things I'm banking on, like for a 6'5 guard with his passing instincts and passing skills, like I'm banking on him being a playmaker. I feel confident that that's going to translate. The assists are going to carry over. And then the fact that he was a great finisher despite lacking explosiveness. Like over the years, I've put less stock into athleticism. We've seen too many guys excel at the NBA level without that Russell Westbrook, you know, burst. And so I love his touch in the paint, the way he uses his body and size to finish. He's got a good pull-up game, shot 41%. And really, the big knock is three-point shooting, but he doubled his three-point mix from a year ago. He shoots over 85% from the line every season. And so I'm just kind of buying him, buying the idea that he'll improve a little bit each year. And by the time he's, what, 22, 23, you know, he'll be a good enough shooter. He doesn't have to be 40% knockdown. But he kind of reminds me of Goran Dragic in terms of his ceiling, in terms of his style. And Dragic entered the league, he was a non-shooter. And then eventually, you know, it just started to click, and he became good enough. And I think Hayes just has to be good enough when you pair it with his scoring efficiency inside the arc, his passing, his finishing, and I think he's got the chance to be a pretty good defender. Maybe not somebody that's going to change a game defensively, but nobody that's going to be a liability and somebody that makes some, you know, good reads off the ball and gets you steals. And so I just don't really have any big concerns with him.
What do you think the ideal role for Patrick Williams is? Patrick Williams, one of the younger players in this draft, combo forward out of Florida State. You have him number 7 on your big board. You know, do you see him as someone who could, like, kind of provide enough rim protection where you compare him with more of a, you know, defensively limited center? You know, what's sort of the ideal setup for Pat Williams?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the best, of course, he's a power forward. And honestly, I don't know what he's going to look like 5 years from now. I have him top 10 because I just think he's just such a good bet. There's just, like, if he hits, I mean, the skill set that he has for his body is pretty unique. I mean, 6'8", 225, obviously he pops physically, but he was handling and picking rolls and dishing with his left hand and knocking down pull-ups at a 40% clip, and he made threes even though it wasn't efficient, and he finished tough inside, and defense, he was, you know, all over the place, made some mistakes here and there, but averaged a steal and block per game. He's the youngest NCAA prospect in the field. There's just, like, a lot going for him, and from what I hear, that he's a worker, he's an animal. I heard that before the season, and honestly, of all the guys that were one and done, I probably knew the least amount about Patrick Williams, and I'm glad that I did, so I didn't have any, you know, any idea of what to expect beforehand, because he's, even though he didn't have a lot of production, he just, the flashes are what I'm buying, and I'm I'm betting on him kind of turning those flashes into more regular occurrences. In terms of his fit, yeah, obviously I think it would be nice for him to have a rim protector behind him. And, of course, who wouldn't want, like, a rim protector who would also step outside and shoot threes just in case Williams' jumper doesn't catch on soon. But he's just like an animal. He can do a lot of different things. He's just a pretty unique player.
Looking at maybe some other guys, a little further back, maybe if the Bulls did trade back, I did not know anything about this guy recently. I'm not like a huge draft Nick or whatever. When we had one of our other draft guys, he was talking up Poku big time. And I see you have him at number 11 here on the board. He seems like a super unique prospect. I guess just talk a little about what you see him or how you see him translating in the NBA, why you have him at number 11, which seems, I mean, that's obviously like lottery level. It just seems like a really unique guy. So I'd like to hear your take on Poku.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen, I could totally understand why you think 11 is a reach, but just like Patrick Williams, like this is just a gamble worth taking in this draft. I don't think you're passing on any can't miss guys at number 11. And when you take into account what he can do, you know, you go down the scouting report. He's 7 foot and he shoots threes. He handles it in open floor. He's a flashy passer. He's a monster shot blocker. And if you look at his stats, I know they were in Greece's second division, but they were the same as they were in FIBA. And he made 1.5 threes. He averaged 3 assists. He averaged over 2 blocks. Like if you look at college basketball database, like no player has ever averaged those particular stats. Like he checks the most unique boxes for a 7-footer for any player. And he's the youngest player in the draft. And he's just like unbelievably talented and skilled. And of course, a lot has to go right for him to hit. But I mean, there's just guys like him don't come around often. I know that's another kind of a cliche, but he's just so rare and unique. And I think if he gets the right coaching staff and the right development team, I mean, oof, he's just a lot of fun. And I've talked to some scouts who are like, yeah, mid second round, you know, and then I've talked to some scouts, including some in the teens who say that if it was up to them, they'd take him where they're picking, which was in that 15 to 20 range, a couple teams. And so I'm curious to see where he goes. I think based on what I'm talking, the guys I'm talking to, I think he's going to end up going like to Portland or to Dallas or to Minnesota in that range. But yeah, he's a risk reward pick, but I think the potential reward is worth the risk in this draft.
And Bulls also have the 44th pick in the second round. So give me some guys who you like in the mid-second round, some dudes who you think might be available and can make an impact.
Yeah, I mean, some of the guys who are like I have top 20 are also, you know, 40 in some other boards. There's just so much parity and so much people have, like I said, the same guy could be 15, could be on 40 in a different board. Like I love Grant Riller. I know he's a popular draft Twitter guy too, and it's just somebody who's such a good shot creator that I don't really care how he fits on your team. I just think he's a steal anywhere on the board. I love Malachi Flynn. I have him at number 20. And I guess depending on what Chicago does at number 4, to me, Flynn, if he's still there at 44, would be an obvious choice. I think Jamias Ramsey from Texas Tech, I know it's kind of similar to Zach LaVine, but just a bucket getter and somebody who's probably low because of some of his like defensive lapses and bad shots and forgets the shot clock and stuff like that. But I think that's stuff that can be corrected over time. You can't teach his body, his shot creation, and his shot making really comfortable, believable shooting stroke. If you ask me, Xavier Tillman to me is somebody who's going to play 10 plus years in the NBA just by making good defensive reads and, you know, making good passes and cutting in a timely fashion and getting easy buckets. Those guys stand up to me. Killian Tilly, I mean, if Killian Tilly is there at 44, which he very well could be, of course, everyone's looking at Tilly's injury history, but he shot over 40% in 4 straight years at Gonzaga. Like, how many guys do that? And how many do it when they're 6'10" and actually have a high skill level and IQ? So to me, there's a lot of guys in this draft. I know this draft doesn't get talked about, you know, in good light, and everyone's talking about it as a down year, but I actually think there's a lot of good value in that 15 to 40 range, and I don't really think there's a much difference between the guy who's 40 and who's number 15.
That is quite a statement. Between 15 and 40, there's not a huge drop in value. Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see the argument for it. You have someone like Skylar Mays in the early 20s. Do you hear about him being a first-round pick? I'm just curious. Yeah.
I'm the only one.
Yeah, I love Skylar Mays, though. I think Skylar Mays is a great pick to be a sleeper who could outperform his draft slot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even positive he gets drafted. I guess he does, but nobody – I haven't heard anyone say that he's a first-rounder. I don't know. Maybe I'm seeing something a little different. Me and you, Ricky, are seeing something a little different, but he kind of reminds me of, like, all the reasons I didn't like Malcolm Brogdon before the draft. Like, I don't want to make the same mistake twice. And Mays, to me, is just, like, such a crafty player who doesn't really need much explosiveness, and I think he's got better with his shot and good passer. If he's not going to be a basketball player, he's going to be a doctor. He's, like, crazy smart. I don't know, just one of those guys I just totally see finding a way into the NBA.
All right, so my last question here for you is just kind of as, like, an outsider, as not a Bulls guy, what do you think of their – just, like, kind of the overhaul that they've done with hiring Arturis Karnišević, Mark Eversley, and they got Billy Donovan here. Do you expect this front office on draft night to be aggressive? Do you think they'll kind of just, like, play it as it goes? I mean, I feel like in Dallas, AK was part of a front office that they found some late gems. They've made some big trades. I guess just, like, anything you've heard about – I know they've kind of played things close to the vest. Like, I guess just what do you think that they're – you would guess this new front office will do as they try to get this rebuild back on track.
I wouldn't be shocked if they blow it up, or at least attempt to blow it up. I don't know how it's going to be. And I know injuries have played a big role in why Chicago hasn't been successful, but I think at this point, like, they got to make a change with the core players, and they could still, like, Markkanen could still have value. I'm always so curious. And I asked Ricky, I think, the last time we did a podcast, I was like, what is Markkanen's value? What is he viewed in Chicago versus what he's viewed around the league? I don't know that answer. I'm curious as, like, what Markkanen could go for in a trade.
I have no idea either. Like, we've talked about it plenty. Like, he had such a straight, like, such a down season, and he's just kind of been, like, the same guy for 3 years now, and, like, obviously super disappointing as Bulls fans here. So, like, I don't know what he would go in a trade. Like, if the Bulls, like, if – I mean, even say, like – I mean, would the Bulls, like, if they tried to trade up for a guy like LaMelo Ball, like, would they include, like, Lauri Markkanen to do that? I honestly have no idea. Or if they tried to trade Lowry for, like, a first-round pick, just, like – I don't know what kind of first-round pick they could get, if they could even get one. I'm honestly not totally sure. Like, do you think they could get anything like that? Do you think they'd want to include it? Like, if the Bulls maybe were trying to aggressive to go trade up for LaMelo Ball to number two or number one, like, do you think they would trade Lowry or any of those guys?
Dude, I don't even know if Lowry is – like, is he good or is he not good?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, I have no idea. The Warriors could be like, I want nothing to do with that guy.
Right.
And then they could also be like, whoa, you're going to throw in Lowry? Then damn right, like, I'll give you, you know, a LaMelo Ball. So, I mean, I have no idea, but I don't know. I'd imagine that the new front office, I love the front office. I love Billy Donovan. Like, I totally have more trust in, of course, I mean, of course, we all have more trust now in the decision making behind the scenes, but I got to think that they're going to go out of their way to try and get new guys, new faces, and try something else because it's really tough to picture much upside with these core guys, and these core guys, you know, need to get paid. So I got to imagine they're going to try and blow it up a little bit.
I got one last question for you, John, and this is a selfish one because every year I write the next year's mock draft, the day after the draft. Mm-hmm. And even though I've had a lot of time, I haven't watched a ton of 2021 tape yet. And I haven't really been able to go to any of the events that I would typically go to, in part because of the pandemic. So I think everyone knows that, or everyone agrees at least, that Cade Cunningham is projected to be the top pick, or is Twitter's favorite top pick to go number one. Who do you have 2, 3, 4? Like, what are some names in that range? Do you view Jalen Green as, you know, a for sure top three guy? Is there a guy with less high school hype who you would have, you know, in that top three range? So just curious what you think the top of the 21 draft looks like outside of Cade.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Cade, and then there's like a gap, and then there's the next group of guys. And I can't say with confidence like who the number two is. I mean, Jalen Green's in the mix, but I could easily see him being more of like a guy who's like 5 or 6. I mean, I really like BJ Boston, Brandon Boston at Kentucky. Like, I don't see how he's not going to be a high pick. I love Kuminga. He's just another guy who he's just so talented and so skilled, 6'8", with his particular perimeter game. Evan Mobley, I mean, I see the appeal to him. I'm still just not jumping out of my chair for these 7-footers who, I mean, I know he has guard skills, but I'm kind of waiting to see whether or not he can actually pull them off in the game. And you know, Jalen Johnson going to Duke is going to be pretty interesting as like a point four. I think at this point, I mean, I'm pretty close to saying Boston would be my number two, but I'm also not a big fan of like having hard, you know, having super confident takes so early before even watching them in college. But I feel pretty confident that Cade is like by far and away the best prospect in the class.
All right. Well, John is one of my favorite who covers the NBA draft, doing it at Bleacher Report. He's been doing it for years. I think your work just gets better and better every year too, man. So I know are sick of this draft class. I think Jason and I are too, but we appreciate you hopping on with us tonight.
Of course, guys. Anytime. I appreciate you bringing me on.
Yeah, and let everyone know where they can find all your work. Obviously, Bleacher Report. If you have anything coming out soon, new mock draft or all that kind of stuff, just if you want to, and your Twitter account, just let our listeners know.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working the phones the past couple of days, so I have like a rumors buzz piece coming out tomorrow. Big board is out Monday, and they're going to be keeping me busy up until draft time. So and I'll be pumping out a lot of content over the next couple of weeks.
Awesome. Good stuff, man. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, what do we got? Like 3 weeks now till the draft? Like you said, it's about damn time. We've been talking about this draft for so much. It's just want this to happen already, and then who knows what the hell is going to happen with the season. We got all these rumors about when free agency – it's going to be fucking crazy in this next like month or two. Like I know the players don't want to start so early, but it looks like the league wants to, and they'll probably talk the players into it. So if we have like draft and then free agency and camp within like the next month, it's going to be absolutely wild. It's going to be a lot of fun, too, even though we haven't really had much of a kind of a downtime. But, Jonathan, thank you again so much for joining us. As always, you've been a pleasure both times you've come on. We'll have to obviously talk to you again in the future and future drafts and all that kind of stuff. For here at Cash Considerations, for Jason and Ricky here, shout out to the Blue Wire Network. Shout out to our sponsors, Indeed and BetOnline. And shout out to all the other great pods across the Blue Wire Network. For us, rate and review us wherever you listen to your pods. Give us those 5-star ratings. Give us your feedback. We'd love to know what we can do better, anything you guys want us to talk about leading up to this draft. Again, it's going to be a busy next couple months here, and we might get Bulls basketball back sooner than most people are expecting. So that's, I guess, kind of exciting with this new era upon us. So for Jason and Ricky, it's been Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We'll talk to you guys next time. Take it easy, guys.